welcome to the first edition of the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. I am Bill Buckmaster, ready to take the first step in what I hope will be a great journey. The success of this journey depends, of course, in large part on you, our listener. The philosophy behind the show, very simple. We present the best and most timely guests possible. Then you make the decisions on the top issues facing us here in Arizona and in this country. We begin the Buckmaster Show with breaking news. In less than an hour, the outgoing Arizona Superintendent of Public Schools and soon to be Arizona's new Attorney General Tom Horn will meet with reporters at the state capitol. Mr. Horn joins us on the Buckmaster Show live line. Happy New Year, Tom Horn.
Oh, Bill, I'm very honored to be your first guest. I was a great admirer of your television show, and I think your radio show will be a great success.
Thank you so much. What is the message going to be that you will be presenting at about 10 o'clock this morning?
I will be finding Tucson Unified School District in violation of the relevant Arizona statute. The statute that was passed took effect December 31st, which was midnight, Friday night. I will be sworn in as Attorney General at noon today. And so that gave me this morning as a window of opportunity, because the statute provides that the superintendent of schools himself can find the district to be in violation. So I'm holding a lame duck session with myself and declaring TUSD to be in violation of this statute, which prohibits various things, among them courses that are primarily aimed at one particular ethnic group.
Let me go over, Mr. Horn, with you a few of the important points in the law. Promoting the prohibits courses that promote the overthrow of the U.S. government, promote resentment toward a race or class of people, are designed primarily for students of a particular ethnic group, and advocate ethnic solidarity instead of the treatment of students as individuals. Now, is it your understanding that TUSD is in violation of all four of these criteria?
They are in violation of all four, but it's important to note that under the statute, they only need to be in violation of one to be out of compliance. And I think the one that's most obvious is number three. That is, they're prohibited from having courses that are designed primarily for pupils of a particular ethnic group. In the RASA or Mexican American Studies program is explicitly designed for Mexican American students. They say that on their website. The head of their, Augie Romero, who is the head of their program for many years, has said so explicitly, and I think that will be the easiest one to prove, but I think they're in violation of all four.
Well, as you know, your actions toward TUSD have angered many in the district and here in Tucson. Mr. Horn, how personal is this for you, or is it a personal thing?
Well, it's personal in the sense that, as I think you know, Bill, I was part of the March on Washington back in 1963, the summer after I graduated from high school, in which Martin Luther King gave his famous speech in which he said that he wanted his children to be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. And it has been my passionate belief my whole life, from the marrow of my bones, I have believed very strongly that people are individuals and that what matters about them is what they know, what they can do, what is their character, and not what race were they born into. And I find it really repugnant that in the 21st century in the United States of America, taxpayer-supported public schools are dividing kids up by race. I think that's repugnant to fundamental American values. I feel very passionately about it, and that's why I've been so dedicated to doing something about it.
One thing that really angers the advocates of the program is that you have never sat in on a TUSD ethnic studies class. What do you say to those people that that make that claim?
Well, I say that if I were to sit in on a class, my presence would affect what was being presented. It would be presented in a they would only present an innocuous plan while I was there. And then if I were asked about it, I would have to say what I saw was innocuous, and it would defeat the purpose of getting to what's truly going on. In fact, Senator Antonori had that experience. He went to see a class, and he feels that he was dog and ponied, which makes a verb of something that we normally think of as a noun. But I didn't want that to happen to me. I've relied upon the written materials and on the reports of teachers. I have five current and former teachers in TUSD who report what, in fact, goes on in these courses. I'm today issuing a 10-page single-spaced report setting forth a lot of that evidence of what's really going on in these classes.
Can you give us a little hint on some of that evidence?
Yeah, I would be delighted to. We have, first of all, I want to read to you in terms of the category, whether it's designed for a particular group. Augie Romero debated me on CNN, and I've set forth a transcript here where the reporter said, why not just call the class Mexican Studies? Why do you put the word La Raza in there? And he answered, it was an attempt to connect to our indigenous side as well as our Mexican side. So that's evidence that this is designed primarily for students of Mexican-American background. In addition, the website that TUSD has says specifically that this program is for Latino students. That's the words they say, for Latino students. Each of the model components creates both a Latino academic identity. Now, catch that, a Latino academic identity. We should have individual academic identity, not Latino academic identity. I quote from a teacher who observed what was taught in the course, and he said the whole inference and tone was anger. They taught students that the United States was and still is fundamentally a racist country to those Mexican-American kids. Individuals in this ethnic studies department are vehemently anti-Western culture. They are vehemently opposed to the United States and its power. They are telling students they are victims and that they should be angry and rise up. By the time I left that class, I saw a change in the students, an angry tone. They taught them not to trust their teachers, not to trust the system. They taught them the system wasn't worth trusting. And I have extensive quotes from five different teachers along the same line.
Okay, and so that will be you'll be presenting that at the news conference, that evidence today.
I will.
Now, failure to comply with this, I understand, could result in the loss of up to 10% of the district's budget. That would be a huge hit for TUSD. I think it's nearly $15 million. Is that your understanding?
That's correct. Now, I've served now 8 years as superintendent of schools, and I've never yet seen a case where, faced with loss of substantial funds, a school district did not come into compliance. I have no doubt but that if they lose this case, and, you know, after I make my finding, they have 60 days, then the new superintendent of schools, John Hoopenthal, has to make a finding. If he finds that the money should be deducted, they have a right to appeal that to an administrative hearing judge. If that judge rules against them, I have no doubt but that they would come into compliance. If they were to subject the district to that big a loss of financial resources in order to be defiant of state law, I think they would be instantly recalled by the parents who wouldn't stand for it.
TUSD Superintendent John Pettycone says the district will be consulting its legal counsel, and they likely will apply for the judicial hearing. We're quickly running out of time, Mr. Horn. We do have I think we can squeeze in one quick call. Could you take a call, please?
Love to.
Go ahead. While we're waiting to get that call up, I want to ask you, what are the priorities now? You will be sworn in about a couple of hours at the noon swearing in. Give us the priorities for Arizona's new attorney general.
Well, during the campaign, I spoke about four priorities. The first one is guarding the border, defending Senate Bill 1070 in the courts, and stopping the influx of narcotics and human smuggling and so on into our country. The second priority is to vigorously enforce the law so we're safe in our homes and our communities. That's the number one responsibility of government, really, to protect the population from predators. The third priority is to create an environment that's conducive to business growth, which means you prosecute businesses that break the law, but for businesses that are decent and that want to obey the law, you establish a cooperative atmosphere to attract business to Arizona and grow business in Arizona. And the fourth priority is to do more in the way of consumer protection and related issues such as protecting our seniors and fighting identity theft.
Okay, Mr. Horn, we're ready with that call.
Mr. Horn.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, my son is a senior at Tucson High, and he is not in these classes. He is Caucasian. But I've been to that school many, many, many times, and I don't see any of the stuff that you are purporting. I'd like to know, is this evidence that you're relaying actually going to be made public? Because it sounds to me like it's hearsay and potentially sour grapes for somebody to write a letter that tends to be, done in a mysterious way. I mean, who are these people?
No, I'm happy to be able to please you. We're making it public this morning, and we're also providing the written materials.
With names of people who wrote letters.
Some of those have been made public. For example, John Ward, who is himself Hispanic, has been open in what he's had to say. Hector Ayala, who's also Hispanic, has been open in what he had to say. He was called a tool of the white man by the head of the program. Ultimately, by the time we come to the hearing, of course, all the names of the teachers who have written to me will be made public. But also being made public is are the written materials, which are unbelievably racist. I mean, let me just read you a couple of sentences.
We're going to have to quickly. We're running out of time quickly.
Well, a quick sentence. White Americans feel a unique sense of entitlement to Americanism, partly because many never travel beyond the borders of the United States. If you would make a statement like that about any other race, it would be obvious.
Well, I have to tell you that I have not seen that in 3.5 years. I have not seen that one time in that school, and I set foot in that school frequently.
Well, I'm not making it up. I'm making public the written materials.
Thank you so much for the caller and the question. Tom Horn, thank you very much. Happy New Year to you. Good luck as Arizona's next Attorney General. Thank you.
Thank you, and I think you'll have a very successful radio show.
Thank you, sir.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA 4-diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
And it's 20 minutes past the hour back on the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. Before we get to Ray Carroll, I do want to mention that the Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers & Rieger. Rieger is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Ray Carroll, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, Bill. Congratulations on the new beginning here at KJLL. And as they say in show business, break a leg.
Yeah, we're off and running. The new beginning, a new year. Front page of the Arizona Daily Star. Time to close some of the very popular hiking paths around Pima County. What's going on right in the prime time of winter when a lot of people are out there walking?
Well, it's also the prime time to get these things through the budget, Bill, and there's been some earmarked funding, some programmed dollars that have come from the supplemental budgets and from some bond election dollars. And those dollars are going to be put towards the Rito and the Santa Cruz River parks. They're very well used, as you said. Yesterday I did an interview with Channel 9, and we were perched there by Craycroft and River, and certainly there was dozens, if not hundreds, of people who we saw in a 15-minute period going back and forth on what are, as you well know, a nice circulation of river parks around Pima County. Now, saying that, these dollars have been earmarked. This is not some slush fund. These are dollars that are going to go towards resurfacing and improving parking areas for that river park system. And really, the maintenance has not been really kept up since about 2001 on some of these parks, so it's very important we get it done. And I'm sorry that it's cutting into peak time as far as snowbirds and others that use with the great weather that we're having these river parks. But at the same time, we're getting good quotes on our contracts and our requests for proposals, and we're also putting Tucsonans back to work. And as a Pima County supervisor, that's important.
It's about a $500,000 project, but as I look at this list, it's very extensive, and I guess the positive thing here is this publicity points out how many paths there are in Pima County.
Well, it will remind people, of course, that we have a fantastic system, and it goes all the way from the east side to the far northwest side, all the way to the south side to the northeast. And what you can't get to on a river park, you can find a bike path to get you there. So it's an extensive circular around Pima County. I've been on bike paths and river parks all over the system. And one of my resolutions, Bill, this year is to take my dog out on the bike paths more in the river park. So I hope you and your listeners will be reminded that we have a great system and we're improving it continually and we're adding to it continually. And hopefully someday, and maybe by this year, 2011, we will have a complete circulation that you'll be able to ride, if you're so inclined, dozens and dozens of miles.
Well, tomorrow, of course, is Pima County Supervisors Day. Tuesday, you're back now to the regular schedule, I guess, with the new year.
Yes, we are, January 4th.
And the board is going to be talking about, well, considering more fingerprinting more employees who work with kids and populations who need special assistance.
Well, it's true, Bill. I think it's important that we have on file, not only we protect people who might be in the line of co-worker with someone, but also that we protect the clients, the children, the elderly that these people will work with. And we do that. It's just a preventative. We're not pointing fingers. We're fingerprinting for a reason. We want to make sure that these people that are going to be hired and these sensitive, whether they're in communications with the Sheriff's Department or Park Service delivery of work within the system, anybody who has touch with sensitive materials or vulnerable individuals is going to be part of a look at fingerprinting for employment purposes through human resources.
And the wastewater treatment department is also going to be considered, well, it's considered critical infrastructure.
Well, of course it is. I mean, it could be obvious that that's one way that you could get into a system through the wastewater treatment plant. What a disaster that could be. But in the end, Bill, I think it's another preventative measure by Pima County government to attain a certain legal status with the federal government, but also to reassure the co-workers and the individuals being served that we do take all precautions to make sure that our workforce is one that is safe to be with.
Well, since I last saw you, and that was on the last TV show on December 17th, the latest development in Rosemont had not occurred. This is another delay on the environmental impact report. What do you look for in 2011 concerning Rosemont? And I know many of our listeners down in Green Valley are very concerned about what's going to be happening there.
Well, people are concerned all over Pima County, and it's not just in Pima County, but I've seen in other communities around Arizona, there are a great interest in reopening or establishing brand new mines. And so because copper price is where it's historically been at the very peak right now, we are seeing a lot more exploration of our mountain ranges to become open pit mining. And so this year, you've seen some controversy with the Forest Service and the Rosemont employers recently having been, you know, criticized for some backroom meetings or meetings that were done without the entire table of those that are stakeholders. And that's part of the controversy. But also, I think the delay in the environmental impact report is something that we as county board members have not requested, nor have we fought for. It's just part of the federal process. They need all the information that they can get. And although at times it seems that the Forest Service has an inside track with the Rosemont Mine Company, we hope that this environmental impact report delay will give a chance for them to fully disclose what occurred at those dozen-plus meetings that were attended by Rosemont and the Forest Service without any other stakeholders present.
A quick follow-up. I was in a gathering on New Year's Day, and someone knew that I was going to be talking with you, and Rosemont would be coming up. And they wanted to say, basically, that copper is incredibly important in Arizona. It's one of, what is it, one of the main C's, the five C's, right, or whatever, of Arizona. Not in my backyard, this person was saying. Everybody's saying, not in my backyard. We do need copper.
Well, of course, it's... it is one of the five C's traditionally for Arizona, but we are producing loads of copper here in southern Arizona with the mines that are in Green Valley already. We are working at full capacity. Our employers of the Sarco and Freeport McMoRan are three shifts, 24/7, 365, churning out copper for the worldwide market, Bill. And it's important that we look at the long-term sustainability of southern Arizona, and that being the water supply first and foremost for all that area, whether it's Green Valley, Corona de Tucson, Sahuarita, Vail, all those areas, Elgin, Sonoyta, are going to be dependent on the water supply from that aquifer. So in the end, Bill, what we're trying to do is protect the environment and preserve the seed corn that we're going to need for development and for sustainable living in that area, which is a fresh water supply. If you save the mountain, Bill, you save the river. If you save the river, you save the town. And that's always been the main concern from the residents of that area. They know how precious water is, and they know how promises of cap water are less and less believable in the future because of Las Vegas, Phoenix, California needing that and having much more clout than we in southern Arizona have in getting it, and that's the CAP pipeline waters.
Got about 20 seconds left. Number one priority for Pima County in 2011 will be?
Budget and finance, Bill. We have to make sure that we maintain the delivery of services while reducing the cost of those services to be delivered. So it's not complicated. It's about the economy, and it's about reducing the cost of government this year because taxes are dwindling due to the reduction of values in property.
Okay, Pima County Supervisor Ray Carroll, good to see you again. Happy New Year. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Bill. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Senator John Kyle is next after CNN News.
Something on your mind?
The time has come for all of us to speak out.
Call in and let us know.
Now start talking.
Talk about how you feel.
KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. If Congress does not raise the debt ceiling, it would be catastrophic for the U.S. economy. Austin Goolsbee, who's one of President Obama's top economic advisors, told ABC's This Week this is not a political game.
If we get to the point where you've damaged the full faith and credit of the United States, that would be the first default in history caused purely by insanity.
America's current debt limit is more than $14 trillion. If you're out of work, you might be able to find a job at Dollar General. The discounter plans to create 6,000 new jobs. Arnold Schwarzenegger can go back to his old job as an actor today. Jerry Brown will be sworn in as California's new governor. A new test might make it easier to find cancer. Johnson & Johnson will team up with Massachusetts General Hospital to develop and market the blood test. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Getting across town to a job interview is stressful enough without being late. But the GPS on my cell phone guides me right where I need to be with no problems along the way. I want the same thing when I do my taxes. TurboTax has a unique GPS feature that guides me step by step, and calculations are guaranteed 100% accurate, so I know it's done right, which helps me reach my maximum refund guaranteed.
Try it online now at TurboTax.com. Choose easy. Accurate calculation and maximum refund money back guarantee details at TurboTax.com.
I made the switch and saved ever since.
Mark Ramirez on transferring his prescriptions to Sam's Club Pharmacy.
Low prices, $4 generics, great staff, and usually I'm in and out in less than 20 minutes.
Our professional pharmacist and team help you save time, but always have time to help.
Just on one prescription, I've saved enough to pay for my whole membership.
Try Sam's Club Pharmacy today. If you're not completely satisfied, get a $10 gift card. Sam's Club, savings made simple. See Sam's Club for details. Savings based on refill of non-insured medication and plus discount.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Nell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com. It's 34 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show, the inaugural edition of the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We're delighted now on the Buckmaster Show live line to bring in U.S. Senator John Kyle, Republican whip of the U.S. Senate. Happy New Year, Senator.
Happy New Year, Bill, and congratulations on your new program.
Thank you. We are off and running. New legislative session of Congress will get underway on Wednesday. How will the new makeup of Congress, Senator, impact the major issues facing this country?
I think session will begin with a bang, with Senate Democrats trying to change the rules of the way that the U.S. Senate operates. And if they do that, we could be in for a long political slog with not very much getting done. I hope that the president's new talk about bipartisan working together will actually come to pass instead, and that he will reach out to Republicans both in the House and in the Senate, and with both houses no longer controlled by Democrats. Now the House is controlled by the Republicans, the Senate controlled by Democrats. I think there's an opportunity there to work together that didn't really exist when all three, the House, the Senate, and the presidency, were in the hands of the Democrats. So I think there's a possibility here for more bipartisanship and to actually get some compromise and get things done. But this first move by some of the new Senate Democrats might pose a little troublesome.
President Obama has been blaming you and the Republican leadership, Senator, for trying to gridlock Congress. What do you say to them?
There are two answers. First, if they had proposed legislation that was supported by the American people, you would have had less opposition by Republicans. But much of what was proposed, the stimulus spending, the bailouts, the health care legislation, a lot of those things were not supported by the American people, and somebody had to say, no, we don't support this. In addition to that, much of the legislation was brought forward without any opportunity for amendment, and that's not the way it's supposed to be done, and so Republicans had to object to that as well. Again, I think there's going to be less of that now because the House is likely to spawn a lot of legislation that is a result of the message sent in this last election. It'll come over to the Senate, and if the Senate Democrat leadership is smart, I think they'll take that up and see if they can reach some kind of middle ground with Republicans. If they insist on saying no to it, then basically Senate Democrats become the new party of no.
How realistic is the repealing the Obama health care program?
The House Republicans will repeal it. It will not be repealed in the Senate because Democrats are in the majority there. However, I think what will happen is it will start a big and robust and needed debate about what's actually in it. You remember Speaker Nancy Pelosi said that, well, we have to pass this bill to see what's in it. And now that we do know what's in it, and a lot of it American people don't like, I think there's a chance not that the whole thing will be repealed, but that parts of it will be repealed, and even President Obama will go along with some of that, I predict.
Shortly before adjourning for the end of the year, the Senate approved the arms control treaty with Russia. It would curb each country's cap on strategic nuclear warheads by about 40%. Russia now must approve. Do you see any problems with them approving that?
And, no, yeah. It's very much in Russia's interest. So after a little bit of noise, I'm sure that they will approve it.
And, of course, you were opposed to it.
I was, and your characterization is technically correct, but, Bill, the Russians already are below both the warhead and delivery vehicle limits, so the treaty actually requires us to come down and enables them to build up to that level that's authorized in the treaty. It was not a very good deal for the United States.
You, along with Senator McCain, opposed the bill now signed into law repealing the ban on gays serving openly in the military. We'll be getting the take from the former head of the military, U.S. Army General John Wickham, will be our guest in a few minutes. I just wondered, this is going to be, some say, an implementation of this is going to be a nightmare.
Well, he's certainly more expert on that than I am, and obviously you'll be talking to him about that. My primary concern was the way that it was done and the fact that there doesn't seem to be a big problem with the way that the don't ask, don't tell policy, which has been the compromise in existence for the last 15 years or so. There doesn't seem to be a big problem with the way that that's working. And so one wonders whether this is more of a policy change by a group that is more interested in the acceptance of their lifestyle as it is to an attempt to improve the military. We have a very specific mission for the military, and it does not easily accept social experimentation and the same kinds of rules of the road that govern our other civic organizational structure in this country. We can do a lot, I think, to advance people's interest in careers and so on without necessarily accepting them into the military service. You do not have a right to serve in the military. And there are all kinds of reasons why people are rejected from service in the military, and it's not a place for social experimentation. So I did oppose it, and I think they're going to have some real problems in its implementation.
Remaining 3 minutes or so, Senator, I want to ask you about some of the hot spots of the world. The world, of course, as you know, remains a very dangerous place. What areas will be the hot spots to keep an eye on in 2011? Surely North Korea needs to be near the top of the list, I would assume.
Yes, North Korea, because of its unpredictable behavior and the fact that it already has nuclear weapons. Of course, Iran having trouble getting the nuclear weapon, but with very aggressive agendas, not only for its own sake, but also for its surrogates, the terrorist groups Hamas and Hezbollah, as well as the a third organization that works in the Palestinian areas. There are other areas to watch. China, for example, is engaging in a significant military buildup, and one wonders really why. There are places, even in our hemisphere, like Venezuela, which are causes for concern. But it seems as we begin every new year, there's never a dearth of places where trouble can begin. And, of course, I haven't even mentioned the eastern states of Africa or the Middle East.
Final question about getting back to the new Congress. The budget needs to be dealt with. Do you foresee problems?
Yes, it's going to be very difficult to constrain spending to the degree that we really need to, and that will result in a lot of political debates. I think that's where you'll see the major political debate over the course of the next 2 years. But everyone talks a good game about the necessity of doing it. I mean, nobody denies that we have to constrain spending. The real difficulty will be exactly how to do that, and that you'll see a lot of political demagoguery once that spending constraint begins.
But you don't see a danger of actually the federal government shutting down?
No, although in order to fund the government, there are going to have to be some changes made that I think liberals are not going to like very much. Republicans are not simply going to continue to fund the liberal programs without trying to attach some kind of spending constraints. And that's why I say everybody acknowledges the need for it, but I predict that once it begins, you're going to see a lot of liberals howling about their favorite programs being cut.
Senator Kyle, thank you very much for being with us, and we want to wish you all the best. I think we have can we get a quick call in here, Senator?
Sure, you bet.
Take one call here on the Buckmaster Show live line.
Hey, Mr. Kyle. And hey, Bill. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you real quick with the, you know, our trade policy with China. We've outsourced a lot of our wiring for our guidance missile systems on our missiles. We just saw the Pacific Fleet Commander just issued a warning with the ability of China to take out our aircraft carriers. When is our trade policy and our military inability to deal with China and defending Taiwan, when is this stuff going to come back together when we bring our jobs back home?
Yeah, big, a lot of things to cover in that. Yeah. I certainly agree.
Well, not really. It's all connected.
Well, no, I understand that, and I agree with your point that we are outsourcing a lot. Once the United States military becomes dependent on foreign countries who may have aggressive designs, that's the beginning of the end of an independent capability on the part of the United States to do what we need to do around the world. But you, instead of moving in a progressive way there, what you have right now is a move to further allow the technology of the United States to be sent to other countries or to be pirated by other countries. And you do have a conflict between free and open trade on the one hand and constraints on technology transfers from the United States that enable countries like China to develop their own military weapons. So it is not an easy square to circle there, and that, as I said, I think it's going in the wrong direction, not the right direction right
okay.
now.
Okay, thank you so much to the caller, Joe, and thank you, Senator Kyle, for being with us. Happy New Year
to you. Appreciate it, Bill. Look forward to talking to you again. Thank
okay,
you.
Bye-bye.
All the best.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at ferroamorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tanqueverde, at the southwest corner of Tanqueverde and Savino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tanque Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tanque Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
And this is the Buckmaster Show, the inaugural edition, the premiere edition. And on the phone with us on the Buckmaster Show live line, one of the show contributors. He will be covering military and foreign affairs for us, General John Wickham, the former U.S. Army Chief of Staff. He was appointed by President Reagan as this nation's 33rd Army Chief of Staff. General Wickham served a total of 41 years in uniform. He is retired with 8 Distinguished Service Medals. General Wickham and his lovely wife, Anne, reside in Oro Valley. General Wickham, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Bill, and I'm honored to be part of your inaugural program here.
Thank you so much. As we were just talking with Senator Kyle about North Korea, you are the expert in that area. You, of course, were in charge and commanded all American and U.S. forces in Korea. You wrote the book Korea on the Brink about the challenges you faced. We've heard a lot of saber rattling toward the end of 2010. 2011, how serious is the threat, General?
It's a serious threat, Bill, because North Korea, a nation of about 25 million, we know has at least 6 nuclear weapons and the makings of another 6 and a very unstable leadership transition underway as the Kim Jong-il seeks to pass the baton of leadership to his young 28-year-old son, Kim Jong-un, who has no experience at all in the government. And so it is a dangerous situation. And people forget the reality is that Seoul, a city bigger than Los Angeles and very modern, the distance from downtown Seoul to the demilitarized zone, which has over 1 million North Korean troops north of it, is the same distance from Davis-Montham to Oro Valley. And so artillery can be rained on Seoul overnight if necessary. So it's a dangerous situation. Now, the good news is that the North Koreans are seeking to moderate the tension, at least in their New Year's message. They want to have talks. They want to ease the tensions. And the South Korean president, although he has been acting like a North Korean leader and saying if there's an attack, we're going to have a merciless counterattack, he has just said today that they are willing to sit down with the North Koreans in a peaceful situation and willing also to provide economic and financial aid to the North. So there are some signs. Furthermore, the Chinese are playing a very constructive, although quiet, role in trying to moderate the situation. I've been to China 6 times, and every time the Chinese leadership from the prime minister on down says that North Korea is one of our key allies. But secondly, we can't tell the North Koreans anything. They're very independent-minded. But nevertheless, the Chinese are trying their best to help.
We have a mutual friend, Steve Herman of the Voice of America in Seoul. Steve was telling me that most Americans don't realize how close military action, very close, it almost occurred there toward the end of the year.
That's right. That's right. I talked to Steve, as you know, and been interviewed by him, and he is current on the issues there. And we do modernize our forces. The South Korean military is very capable. It's as strong as we could possibly make it, and modern equipment, and so it can defend itself. We still have about 25,000 U.S. military there, and we may reduce even further from that as we begin to reconstruct and adjust our own armed forces.
We're talking with General John Wickham, former Chief of Staff of the U.S. Army. We need to switch to Afghanistan. Of course, the reports are mixed about what's going on over there. I know the loss of Richard Holbrooke, the special envoy to Afghanistan, hit you personally. Dick Holbrooke was a friend of yours. I believe he wrote the foreword to your book, Korea on the Brink. Is that correct?
Yes, Dick Holbrooke was a friend. He did write the foreword, said some very kind things. One of the remarkable things about this giant diplomat, unlike a lot of people in government and high places, here was a man who cared for people that worked for him. He went out of his way to do things to help them. And so an unusual characteristic, but he was a giant. He's going to be hard to replace. The key role that he was playing is in the so-called AFPAC, Afghanistan-Pakistan area, and moderating tensions and dangers there. Pakistan is, of course, a crucial problem that we face, a nation of almost 200 million people. And they have over 100 nuclear weapons, and they feel very deeply threatened by India. They lost two wars to India, and their country was split up into Bangladesh and Pakistan as a result of one of those wars. So there is a visceral, deep-seated concern about India. And while we complain about the PACs not doing enough to go after the terrorists and the Taliban and paying too much attention to India, we need to understand the Indian-Pakistani problem. Holbrooke understood that in spades, and it's going to require some very earnest diplomacy to moderate that situation. You're right, Bill, that Afghanistan does pose a serious challenge for us in the future. It's an ongoing hot war over there now. We are making some progress in suppressing Taliban, and we are doing great results with the fielding of the Afghan army and police forces. Still have a way to go. The difficulty is that we have a government there in Afghanistan that is, as we reports indicate, very corrupt, incapable really of providing the kind of broad-based humanitarian support leadership that the Afghan people need. So we have challenges on the governmental side as well as continuing on the fighting side. But I think the strategy we're pursuing can produce results. The plans are, as you know, to begin some phase out of combat troops in the summer of this year. And at least NATO and the president seem committed to that.
The implementation of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, General, if you were the current U.S. Army Chief of Staff, would that be kind of a nightmare or what?
I don't think so, Bill. The Don't Ask, Don't Tell lifting is probably a timely thing to do right now. There's been enormous progress in tolerance of the gay and lesbian community in this country in the last couple of decades. I've seen that. You've seen that. And while there are going to be some difficulties, I would have preferred, as a senior officer, to await the end of hostilities before we lift the ban, because it's going to create some disciplinary and adjustment problems for the military. But I think it's going to be easily handled. I remember back in the early 1950s when we integrated the black minority into combat units. I was a company commander in Berlin, and I had some difficulties, but we easily overcame them, and I think we're going to easily overcome any disciplinary problems that this lifting of the ban creates now.
We're talking with General John Wickham. He is the show contributor on military and foreign affairs for the Buckmaster Show. Quickly, General, the quality of the military and these continuing strains of troops who are serving multiple multiple tours in the theater of operations, very difficult on the troops and their families.
Very important issue, Bill, that you raised. Yes, the military, the Army and Marine Corps in particular, are stretched almost to the breaking point. Now, good news is that we're almost out of Iraq, and if the timetable for Afghanistan is followed, we're going to begin just coming out of Afghanistan. Still, the American people need to recognize that probably for the foreseeable future, we are going to be dealing with tensions and terrorists around the world, trying to help nations protect themselves and trying to help protect our own interests. So it's going to be a difficult challenge for our armed forces. We have to keep our armed forces modern, and we have to keep them with good people. We have some of the best we've ever had in the armed forces now.
I know you make frequent visits to the Veterans Administration Center here in Tucson. It's a good care facility as far as you're concerned?
The Tucson Veterans Affairs facility is probably one of the best in the nation. That's thanks to Gabrielle Giffords and her energetic leadership on the House Veterans Affairs Committee and the House Armed Services Committee. But it's also due to the quality professional leadership at the VA Medical Clinic here. Yes, it's one of the best, and they're challenged, as they are all over the United States, with a growing number of cases. They estimate there are over 300,000 veterans from Afghanistan and Iraq that have serious brain injuries that have yet to hit the hospitals. So we have a long way to go in dealing with that. Rick Shinseki, who is the head of the Veterans Affairs Department in Washington, recently visited here and made some profound comments about the VA budget and VA direction. The VA budget is the largest they've had in 30 years. Thanks to the Congress and to the current administration's leadership. Secondly, the VA gets its budget 1 year in advance so that they can plan on hiring and construction and negotiating for best medical supplies. Shinseki also wants to double the number of small clinics. There are 800 of them now in the United States. He wants to double that number so that we can reach out to veterans in rural areas. They're instituting a telemedicine program so that they can contact veterans in rural areas that can't get to any kind of VA facility. So there are some major efforts underway to improve the quality of Veterans Affairs care.
General John Wickham, thank you so much for being a show contributor to the Buckmaster Show on Military and Foreign Affairs. We wish you all the best in 2011.
And same to you, Bill, and all to your listeners. Happy New Year, and let's hope that this is going to be a prosperous, resurgent year for America. God bless.
Thank you so much, sir. General John Wickham on the Buckmaster Show, buckmastershow.com, or always here on KJLL. We are on 9 to 10 live every morning, Monday through Friday. Then we re-air the program from 7 to 8 in the evening. Tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show, the premiere week continues. Congresswoman Giffords will be with us, Councilman Kasachek, and a couple of our show contributors. Bill Buckmaster wishing you a great day.